Julian Lopez is a practicing licensed clinical social worker who works with people with persistent severe mental illness. Her work includes quality improvement services and therapy. Her current research is focused on implementation science in reference to the CDC guidelines for HIV/STI prevention, screening, and treatment. She also works to integrate mental health and other health outcomes in regards to barriers related to HIV care, engagement, and linkages to care. Her presentation this morning is entitled, "Does Suicidality Continue to Occur Among Individuals with HIV Engaged in Care in the Era of Antiretroviral Therapy?" Please welcome Ms. Lopez.
Good morning. So it's really hard to follow up with these awesome researchers next to me. So hopefully this will kind of nicely shape and end the session with a little bit more information about suicidality, ideation, and how that works in HIV care. So what is successful treatment in people living with HIV? Here is, I think, a really great diagram from Mugavero, who talks about how treatment success would look like when outlining the essential steps from diagnosis and really just knowing and testing all the way to optimal clinical outcomes, which in this case would be virological suppression and therefore reduction in HIV infection rates. The process of engagement in HIV care, such as linkage, retention, re-engagement especially, are essential intermediaries for achieving maximal success for the treatment as prevention approach, as some of my colleagues here have mentioned, for HIV prevention. What we do know is comorbid psychiatric illnesses, which are associated with diminished health-related quality of life, are more common in persons with HIV than in the general population. I think that the researchers, and I'm sure researchers out in the public, realize that that's the case. Specifically, the prevalence of depression in HIV-related infected clinic populations has been estimated to range from about 22 to 32%, while recent data from a nationally represented sample of HIV-infected persons receiving care show depression's rate in the upwards of 38 to 40%. So again, recognizing that these people who are engaged in care, so as the last speaker here said, that despite being engaged in care, how does that still affect mental health outcomes and HIV infection rates? These rates are 2 to 3 times higher than those seen in the general community population. I also highlight here, outside of depressive symptomology, which is the focus of this particular presentation, but obviously anxiety symptomology is regularly linked in mental health outcomes. You know, you can't separate the physical health from mental health and one mental health disorder versus another, as well as substance use. So talking more about depression and HIV, people living with HIV and suffering from depression have their own kind of treatment cascade. So we have the Gardner cascade that has been well known in the HIV world, but then there's also a kind of a treatment cascade of its own perspective for people who are suffering from depression. Although highly prevalent, as we've seen in this research, it goes widely unrecognized. So what does maybe a treatment cascade for people suffering from depression look like? So from Pence in 2013 kind of gives this similar idea. Obviously, this doesn't seem very different from what you would see from the treatment cascade from Gardner. To better define depression treatment cascade for HIV patients, it would be, for example, in this particular article, 45% of people who are diagnosed with major depressive disorder cases in HIV patients are recognized clinically. And then of those clinically recognized, only about 40% are receiving treatment. And then it kind of falls down, the attrition falls down from there, because yes, they may be clinically recognized, but is the treatment adequate? And is if the treatment adequate, are we still seeing a stable way of mental health and being able to cope with depression? We know that depression is associated with non-adherence treatment to ART, antiretroviral therapy. In addition to non-adherence to ART, though, there are other factors that are affected. We have inconsistent medical care, we have increased risk of substance use disorders, and the overall cognitive thought process for decision-making may be also in danger. We realize, as we much know, that the strong links between mental health care in regards to depression and suicidal ideation is very much present, and that's seen in literature throughout. In the study recently conducted by the World Health Organization, amongst those diagnosed with depression, key indicators for suicide included previous self-harm, we had severity of illness, alcohol, drug use, as well as serious or chronic physical illnesses, something that you would probably consider as HIV, as now it's been kind of moved forward into a chronic disease. And then we also have lack of partner, so that social support, I think it really kind of brings that together, as well as anxiety and personality disorders. Therefore, understanding the barriers to medication adherence among the population is imperative in order to identify methods to reduce transmission risks and improve health outcomes. Psychiatric illness, particularly all that encompasses depressive symptomology and its strong association with suicidality, has been identified as a barrier to consistent care and medication adherence. So the point of this particular study that was done was to assess factors related to suicidal ideation among a sample of individuals seeking HIV care at a HIV clinic in St. Louis. Specifically, the clinic was with Washington University in St. Louis. They have an infectious disease clinic. The assessments that were done particularly were psychological and behavioral annual assessments done during their routine visits in 2012. So what did we look at in those assessments? We took, obviously, the socio-demographic factors that are always important, so gender, employment status, annual income level, housing status, highest level of education attained. We also used, to measure depressive symptomology and suicidality, we used the Patient Health Questionnaire 9, which is shown to be a valid and standard instrument. And then we used GAD, the General Anxiety Disorder 7 form, to measure anxiety symptomology. Biomedical markers that were also gathered from their medical records were CD4 cell counts and HIV viral load. So the analysis that kind of went along with this was, we did the descriptive analysis using bivariate associations. So for any categorical variables, we used chi-square, and any continuous was t-test. Some of the chi-square analyses were gender, HIV viral load with less than 200 or greater than equal to 200. We had CD4 count that followed that same process. We had annual income of less than 10,000 or greater than 10,000. We had, if they had had a sexual partner in the last 3 months, if they had not, then that was a no, and if they had one or more, then that was considered yes. And then we also looked at the anxiety symptoms using the GAD score. So minimal anxiety was any score between 0 to 10 as validated through the system, but anything above 10 was considered moderate to severe anxiety. We also looked at average alcohol use. And so that was an important factor that we thought would be important. And in the PHQ-9, to be able to measure suicidal ideation, in the last question of the PHQ-9 asks, in the last 2 weeks, have you had thoughts of hurting yourself or others? Which is in a Likert scale of 0 to 4, 0 being none, no days that I have the thought, to 1 being some, nearly every day, and all every day. And so that's kind of how we decided. We dichotomized the suicidal ideation by 0 being none, and then anything above 1, 2, 3, 4 being yes, I had some form of suicidal ideation in the last 2 weeks. We had recruited 628 participants. In our sample size, approximately 71% was male population. About 35% had received a high school degree or GED. And close to 13% considered themselves homeless. Almost 40% of the sample did not have a sexual partner in the last 3 months. The biomedical markers specifically we looked at, CD4 cell count of less than 200 was about 12%. And more surprisingly was the viral load being above 200, was close to 30%, which is high for this particular sample size. So this demonstrates that they did not have a virological suppression in this particular sample. So looking at the bivariate analysis and factors associated with suicidal ideation and those engaged in care, we saw that about 79 or 13% of the sample reported any level of suicidal ideation. And in the previous 2 weeks. Striking here is kind of the percentage that you see people endorsing suicidal ideation and the high prevalence of moderate to severe anxiety. I think that just kind of, again, highlights the integration of mental health and how anxiety, depression, and suicidality all kind of meld together. And then a linkage to unemployment status, which again is understandable in that regard, at 83%. Among those with HIV and engaged care, suicide ideation was significantly associated with females, individuals with unsuppressed viral load, people who endorsed moderate severe anxiety symptoms, participants who considered themselves homeless, unemployed, and lastly, participants who had no sexual partners in the last 3 months. There were no significant differences in regards to average alcohol, weekly average alcohol consumption, and nor was there relationship in regards to CD4 cell count. So what does this mean in regards to our multivariate analysis, which we use a logistic regression for? While controlling for viral load, CD4 cell count, and unemployment status, we saw that homeless individuals had 5.6 odds of reporting suicidality, and those endorsing moderate to severe anxiety had about 1.9 odds of reporting suicidality. There were no other statistically significant associations that occurred. So what does this mean in regards to the implications? Deaths from suicide have declined substantially since the inception of ART, about 50%. So that's really great. Nevertheless, suicide rates in HIV-infected individuals are more than 3 times higher than the rates of the general population. Even among populations with access to HIV care and medications, HIV infection seems to persist as a disease that's associated with social demographic challenges, psychological well-being, and gender. These findings heighten the need to address systematic problems by developing and testing multi-level interventions, so ecological framework, and to address inequities in care experiences. So we recognize there are barriers to all of when it comes to intervention research and how to reduce HIV infection rates and suicidality. Challenging the provision of mental health care specifically with people living with HIV in HIV clinical settings, so we're talking about HIV clinics or primary care setting, includes perhaps the practitioner's lack of experience or expertise related to psychiatric diagnoses, as well as treatment and suicidality management. But, as Maid mentioned earlier, depression and suicide ideation is widely unrecognized in settings where perhaps mental health is not the primary lens. And so evidence-based practice in social work, as I come from that background, evidence-based practice as well in public health is very much an important perspective. Mental health interventions that have that evidence-based portion is important in being able to integrate into primary care settings. But more specifically, perhaps something like contracting mental health specialists to come in and be able to work with primary care settings, or more staff trainings and looking at how well those trainings actually help with dissemination and implementation. Again, another focus that's important in the work that I am interested in. As well as I think my researchers have also have noted about important kind of robust screenings that are happening and where does that lie and how well do those screenings and finding a validated standard kind of screening that integrates those two perspectives from a primary healthcare setting but to mental health to HIV care. Meta-analysis I read of studies of collaborative management of depression in a general primary care showed improvement of baseline depressive symptoms, adherence to depression treatment, as well as response to treatment, with strong support from these effects across a broad range of primary care settings, and more importantly, low-resourced settings. So I think that's also a very important factor to take into account. And so that was my presentation. Thank you for your time. So my mentor, since I'm getting my PhD at St. Louis University, is Dr. Embal Shockham, and she was one of the main people to help me with this research. And then obviously people at the Washington University HIV Clinic, I couldn't have done them without them, with the faculty and the patients who are willing to help us with this survey.